recent years, comedian Joel Kim Booster has been one of the most exciting figures in the stand-up comedy scene. He's performed sets on late-night shows, including The Late Late Show with James Corden and on Conan.
And the reason I have this very goofy name is, yes, I was adopted by a nice white Midwestern couple in the mid-80s, like many Korean babies were. Korea in the mid-80s, if you were around, you probably remember, it was the only country that would fly a baby to the U.S. and you didn't have to go and pick it up. So it was very much the Grubhub of babies back then. It was delivered by a very grumpy man on a bike. Forgot my mom's Pepsi, wouldn't go back for it. It was a disaster.
During the pandemic, Joel's been able to stay busy writing for shows including Netflix's Big Mouth and co-hosting the podcast Urgent Care. Now, after more than a year without indoor comedy sets, he's scheduled to perform for a crowd again later this month in LA.
I feel really, really excited to get back on that horse. I'm a little nervous. I feel a little guilty as well. There's like this guilt creeping in where I'm like, I feel bad for the people who are paying real money to watch me get good at this again, because I have no idea. I mean, it's been so long since I've done an hour of stand-up comedy sustained. So it'll be really interesting to see how it goes.
When I talked to Joel over Zoom this week, he told me he's feeling a little rusty, but also hopeful about getting back to the style of comedy he really loves.
I've done a few outdoor shows that have been more shorter sets, like 10, 15 minutes, that sort of thing. And it is akin to riding a bike. You know, the muscle memory is there. I remember most of my jokes. There is just a little bit of awkwardness. I think that everybody in the world is feeling at parties in terms of interacting with other people, tenfold interacting with a group of people in an audience. So there is just a little bit of a barrier there that I'm trying to get over. But I'm mostly just really excited because this is what I do. And I'm a pretty old school stand-up comedian in that I didn't spend a lot of time online making content over the pandemic. Stand-up is what I do. And so I've really, really, really missed it. And I'm going to milk it and enjoy it for, you know, every moment that I can.
Yeah, you told Vulture that stand-up was the only thing you're really good at. We can dispute that, but I guess, what is it about stand-up that is so different? Like, do you feed off of the energy of a live audience, or it just Zoom just doesn't work for it?
It's definitely that. I mean, it's definitely the interplay with the audience is a huge part of it for me. I mean, that's how I write as well. I'm not a comedian who sits down and like writes, like, you know, I haven't been writing a ton of jokes about the pandemic, mostly because I need the interplay with the audience to sort of, it's a conversation for me, you know, like when I write new jokes, I sort of start with a premise and then go out and work it out live on stage in front of an audience. And without that audience to work it out, it's really hard for me to land on what the joke even is, because it's conversation for me. I think for me, stand-up is like the ultimate meritocracy in the arts. You know, there is a lot of nonsense that goes on, I think, in writing and in acting, a lot of politics at play. Not always the best person gets the part, or not always the best writer gets the best spot in the room. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. Whereas with stand-up, I mean, if they're laughing in the moment, you know that you're doing well. And there's no feeling like, there's no replicable feeling like that anywhere else in the arts, at least that I've experienced.
I talked to Melissa Villaseñor, and she was saying that she doesn't actually want to try out pandemic related material. Yeah. Like, are you moving away from the pandemic and what you're doing? Are you leaning into it? How does that work?
I have one little baby pandemic joke that I've been doing, just sort of, it feels sort of necessary to address the elephant in the room, at least up top. But from then on, I'm sort of moving away from it and framing everything as though the world is normal again, because I think that's what people are craving. I don't think people want to be in the headspace of talking about, you know, the weirdness of wearing masks. You know, I think people want to look forward and they want to look back. They want to talk about dating again, because that's what, you know, they just want to talk about bad sex and dating and everything in between.
Do you feel responsibility for that? Like, I don't know, it feels kind of heavy.
What do you mean responsibility? Like,
like to make people happy right now.
Yeah. I mean, that is, it's sort of a two-way street, right? Like, I'm doing this because it makes me really happy. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going back out on stage because it makes me really happy. And I know that in part, those people are coming out because they want to be really, really happy. And so we're sort of, I don't know, it's like a mutual agreement between the two of us that we're going to have a good time on that while I'm on stage. And as long as that agreement holds up, I think that we both get what we want out of it.
I'm not going to ask you to, you know, plagiarize your act, but I wonder if there are bits you're particularly excited about trying out.
There's a lot of bits that I'm a really interactive comedian. I really love to interact with the audience and do a lot of crowd work. And that's the kind of stuff that I'm really excited to get back into to trying, you know, and interrogating relationships is a really big part of my set. You know, finding couples and figuring out the intricacies of their relationship and what makes them tick and work and not work and things like that. And I have a lot of jokes that hinge on those interactions. And so I'm really, really excited to figure out how to do that in a socially distant way now.
Yeah, I was going to say, is your audience going to be masked? Like, will you be able to read them?
Yes,
in that way?
The audiences that I've been performing for even outside have been masked. So it is a little bit more of a challenge. There's definitely more to navigate there. But I think like body language goes a long way and, you know, eye contact and things like that. Like I can get through. I can figure it out with the mask on.
How do you practice?
How do I practice?
Yeah.
I mean, normally I practice by doing, you know, shows in the back of the bar on the east side of LA on the weeknights. You know, that's normally how I practice. I have no practice. I have no outlet for practice at this point. Like Zoom shows don't cut it. Zoom shows are a completely different muscle. It's a completely different skill set than real stand-up comedy. So I'm kind of going in after a year. It's like running a marathon after not running for a year and some change. So it'll be a real interesting challenge to see how I make it through this hour. Right now, I've just been watching old tapes of myself. That is, that's sort of the intermediary for me.
You're a big tweeter too. Like,
I am a big tweeter. I'm not as big, prolific as I was before the pandemic though, because I just have less to say right now because my life feels so much smaller. But I, you know, as the world opens up and as I have more, you know, experience out in the world, I think I'll have more to say.
Are there specific things that will make you feel safe in a club, do you think, going in? Or like when you're performing, do you just put everything else out of your mind?
Yeah, I'm not really thinking about personal safety while I'm performing, I guess. I'm like, there is something, I don't know, you know, you just sort of jump and while you're up there, it is sort of this like zone of confidence that you just have to have in order to make it through the set. And so I'm, you know, I know that things will be clean. The mic will be clean, sanitized. Everyone will be in masks except for me. I'll be, you know, socially distant, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not super nervous about it, but I'm mostly just excited to get back indoors and see how it feels.
LA has this very special comedy community and places that are kind of legendary where comics of all different kind of stripes come and work their stuff out. I wonder what that has been like for you to see some of these venues closed for so long.
I mean, it's been really tough. It's been really, really hard to see like places like the, you know, the Virgil go dark for me. I mean, that's one of my like favorite places to perform in LA. And it feels like a loss of a home almost, you know, like a creative home. And so we all feel, I think, a little unmoored, you know, like we've been doing these, I just did a show in the back of a pickup truck in a backyard, and it's not exactly the same. It doesn't have the same history. It doesn't have the same vibe as the home clubs that we're all used to performing at. So we all feel a little unmoored right now, I think.
Have you sketched out a plan for the coming months? Do you think you're going to go on tour, or are you kind of starting gradually?
Starting gradually. I have a few show dates in, like, I know in June I'll be in Arlington, Virginia, and I'm going to be in New York for most of the summer, and I'm doing a sort of residency in New York where I'll be, you know, doing an hour every week or so in New York, which will be really exciting. But for now, it's just sort of like figuring out where places are open and where I can get the reps in.
Joel Kimbooster is a comedian who's written for shows including Big Mouth and the other two. He's also got a podcast called Urgent Care. Joel, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.